We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyreek Evans.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the show. The Pelicans went 3-1 this week, only dropping one game to Sacramento at the start of it. And Michael, we get to do a recap. After a win. This never happens. I'm so excited.
I know. After three wins, I thought for sure, especially after that first quarter, that the Pelicans weren't going to be able to win today because of our podcast jinx. But they pull it out, and they did it in dramatic fashion. They had a last-second shot to put them into overtime. We see Monty going with all kind of crazy lineups in overtime to help get the victory. I mean, I think we're kind of being trolled in a good way. I think they're trying to catch us off guard by doing something so out of the ordinary. They don't think we'll know what to talk about, but we will.
Yeah, that was actually. I mean, he was doing the offense defensive substitutions at points that I was like excited about. I mean, there was a lot in this Denver game that made me like woohoo, yay! But we have to be downer. That's just like our modus operandi. So. We now have 26 wins. One more, and we're probably not going to be top five.
Yeah, I mean, as we said on the last podcast, even before the wins started rolling off, it wasn't going to be possible to finish with the bottom five record. But I don't know. I hope people are enjoying this. I hope that people are enjoying seeing, you know, the maturation in Austin Rivers or the fantastic games from Anthony Davis. I got the feeling when Anthony Davis got hurt against Dallas that some people wouldn't have mind, you know, seeing him sit out the rest of the season to try to hope to tank for this pick. And to me, that would have just been ridiculous, especially when you see how he's playing now. I mean, he's playing like a top eight, top 10 player in the league, and all of these games are going to help moving into next year. So there's still so much here to watch and be excited about as we move into next year. I mean, yeah, the team probably won't have a pick and they definitely won't make the playoffs, but it's a long journey. Those aren't the only two possible things you could root for.
Yeah, and Joel Evans and David Wesley brought it up in, I think it was the last game against Milwaukee, that this may have almost been a blessing in some ways that all these guys were injured. Because Davis now gets to be the unconditional leader on the floor. Like, he is the man. And there's no one really to challenge him at this point. Drew's not there to have the ball in his hands and be the all-star. And Eric Gordon is Eric Gordon. And, you know, Ryan Anderson was taking the most shots when he played with Davis for those few games we got to see them together. So you agree with that? Anthony Davis, this may propel him a little faster on his trajectory?
Yeah, I mean, I think he was amazing already. I do think it helps him. I do agree with Jerry V, what he said on the last podcast, though, that you also want to figure out who the alpha is at the guard position. And, you know, I still think that's Jrue Holiday when it's all said and done. So as well as especially Tyreek Evans has been playing, it would have been great to see Jrue playing with this team, but and defining his position moving forward. But I think clear cut, the number one guy and the guy who, as scary as it sounds, I expect to come back 10% better next season even, is Anthony Davis, and you can't help but get excited.
Yeah, during the four-game stretch, there's only been one game where he didn't take the most shots on the Pelican side, and that was against the Lakers, where he took 16, and Evans squeaked ahead with 17 shots. So it's been an amazing stretch. And, you know, you and I don't talk about Anthony Davis that much. It's like he scores his 20 points and gets his 10 rebounds, hits some blocks, and most we ever say about him usually is, wow, he's really good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was just what struck me in the Milwaukee game was how he almost seems to have grown into his body better. Like, I've always stated, like, Julian Wright, we called him Giraffe Calf on the site. That was his nickname because he always looked like his limbs were going the wrong direction. He reminded you of like a puppy that was running out there with the feet that are way too big for the rest of its body. And Anthony Davis last year and the beginning of this year even, I felt kind of the same way that, you know, he'd go up to try to do a layup and like his legs were sprawling out in weird directions and looked like he was almost Mr. Fantastic from the Fantastic Four, just all rubbery. And now, like, he does those one dribble pull-ups, and they're smooth, and he goes to the basket, and he hits these layups off glass, and he still looks a little awkward because he's hit, but everything is just so much more smooth, and he's just in so much more control over what he's doing. I mean, I can't say enough over him the past four games. He's scoring every way you could ever want.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some back to the basket that needs to be added. I think his face-up game is about 80% of the way there. I forgot which team it was, but I was watching the Way feed, and even their announcers noticed that he drives left literally every single time on the face-up when he drives. So I think he needs to add the ability to drive right on the face-up, but I think his face-up game has a little jab step, could put the ball on the ground, one or two dribbles, pull up, could just pull up. You know, I think he could be as effective from that 16 to 18 foot area as Tim Duncan. I mean, he gets it in a lot of the same places. Tim Duncan used the glass. Davis just goes right in, but I think he could have a similar game. I think just needs to add a little back to the basket, needs to add the right hand game on the face up. And I'd say the only other weakness I've noticed is that when a guy Anthony Davis is on ball defense, when a guy goes directly at him with his back to the basket, I mean, we saw John Henson score on him at will a couple of times. We saw Fareed tonight do the same thing. He could definitely improve there, but I mean, the guy's an A-minus right now, and he's 2 days away from his 21st birthday. So, I mean, we're talking about little things to get this guy from A-minus to becoming an A-plus player, and I really think that could happen as soon as the second half of next year, and definitely by the following year, which is just, it's crazy to think that, you know, a guy 22 years old will be in the conversation for best player in the league.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would have added to that list of offensive things he needs to add is a few counter moves. He gets going, and he doesn't have, like, a way to reverse yet. But you're right. I mean, the guy's – I'm in awe. And I cannot wait to watch him for the next, you know, 10 years. And I'm 100% willing to bet now that he is going to be one of the guys who is pushing for league leader in scoring every year in just a couple seasons.
Yeah, I mean,
and I never would. I mean, when we drafted him, if he had become an okay offensive player and we got all the defense that he showed, I was happy. This offense is, it still blows my mind he has it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll continue to have to get the free throws. I think it's hard to be a league leader in scoring if, you know, you're not shooting threes in today's day and age. So he's going to have to get to the free throw line, you know, as much as we saw tonight. But, yeah, I mean, you don't have to convince me. I've always said David Robinson, and I see that in his peak. A big part of it will be depending on how they build this team. I mean, I think obviously they have to get Eric Gordon away and add, you know, guys with far lower usage rates in order to ensure that Anthony Davis is getting the 16, 18, 20 shots that he's going to need to be that type of player. But yeah, I don't think there's any question that we're going to see an A-plus player on both ends of the court when he's on at his peak.
Yeah. So let's roll to some of the games. How much you want to talk about this Sacramento Kings game? We got to do a podcast, and then they went and lost immediately afterwards.
Yeah, the Kings game was
ugly.
It was bad. It was a game that I didn't feel. I'm not saying that Sacramento's tanking. I know their owners, you know, really against it, and actually got into an argument with one of the Celtics owners at the Sloan Conference, which sounds like it was the highlight of the event when, you know, basically he called out the Celtics owner for tanking, and the Celtics owner just, you know, replied, well, you know, we're trying, we're just bad. If we're tanking, what the heck have you been doing the last 10 years? I know Sacramento's not trying to tank, but it didn't seem like they were going all out in that game. And, you know, there were some bright spots, but to me, there was a stretch at the end of the third quarter that I thought was this team's worst basketball of the year. And yes, I do remember the Brooklyn Nets game. I do remember every other game. I mean, there was a stretch where this team missed five straight free throws, was just turning it over. And honestly, the free throws were so bad that the Sacramento Kings actually pulled probably the first ever hack-a-shack that I've seen on a guard.
Right.
When, you know, Austin Rivers missed four in a row, and they fouled him on purpose. Ironically, he made those two free throws, but yeah, there was a stretch where the Pelicans led 53-48. Anthony Davis misses a free throw there at the 5:11 mark, and then, you know, at the end of the third quarter, it's 68-59, and you know, the Pelicans made a little run in the fourth, but I felt like that was the stretch where they lost a very winnable game.
Yeah, I mean, they had it in hand, and then Reggie Evans. Really, I think he was the difference maker without any question in that game. Like, DeMarcus Cousins, people continue to, you know, love DeMarcus Cousins and how, you know, he's such a load in the paint and he can score. The dude wasn't that effective for a lot of the game. He got fouled a lot. But we're talking 23 shots, but he had 23 points, but he took 13 shots and had six turnovers.
Yeah.
And he's just not as efficient as he's billed, and he is so slow. He barely even shuffles up the court. Defensively, he's a mess. This guy, and the announcers are applauding him because he's not screaming after every play. Hey, good job. You're not getting technical fouls.
Yeah.
You're so wonderful. Your demeanor is so much better. Like, look at his face. It looks like he's about to burst into tears every time.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm not a Kings fan, because if I had to watch him every single night, I don't know if I'd be able to.
Yeah, that's what you're building your hopes around for the next 5, 10, 4 years. His Cousins, because I don't care who they get, even if they get Andrew Wiggins. You think Andrew Wiggins is coming in there and wrestling away the team from DeMarcus Cousins?
Mm-mm.
That's not happening. So, yeah, I mean, it was a frustrated game. It was a game that was, you know, well within their reach. I really felt, and I always feel this way when we play them, that the guy you don't really have an answer for is Isaiah Thomas, and I'm still Isaiah Thomas is, along with the Phoenix Suns, those are my two biggest surprises for the season. Like, I keep wanting to dismiss him because of his height, but I think he's a legit quality point guard in this league, and a guy that, you know, he's not your prototypical, and I really don't know what type of team you would build around him if you wanted, or not build around him, but what type of team he'd be on if you wanted to be a contender. But if you got to throw the height out, he's a legitimate player, and with, you know, with Brian Roberts at the point, we don't really have a legit answer for him.
Yeah, and the thing about Isaiah Thomas too is, you know, every so often they get players like this that come into the NBA who you know, they're short, that limits them dramatically, but they have enough skill, it doesn't matter. So, I mean, we're Hornets Pelicans fans. I mean, you can't forget Muggsy Bogues.
Yeah.
And there are other guys. Brevin Knight held down a starting job for 5 years. He was like 5'10". You know, Spud Webb actually was a starter for 2 seasons. Nate Robinson's not a bad player. Even, I mean, who we watched tonight, Ty Lawson is 5'11".
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can do it.
You got to hope that that Isaiah Thomas and what he's doing this year just gives general managers even much more faith in Pierre Jackson, and it's a nice little swap. But yeah, I thought that was a winnable game. Pelicans couldn't pull it out, but since then, 3 straight wins. So let's get to the victories.
Wait. I want to ask you one question before we jump on.
All right.
And I do appreciate you didn't mention Rudy Gay in that game. Thank you. was I the only one who was grinning? And even though my team was losing, was greatly enjoyed Reggie Evans catching the ball at the top of the key, dribbling, jab-stepping, dribbling, step back, and took a jumper. What, after the work he was putting into that game, did he not deserve that step-back jumper?
Oh, he deserved a 3.
I mean, it was – I was just like, you know what? You have been knocking my team around this whole game. You deserve – take that shot. Even if you miss it by 15 feet, you deserve to get that shot.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I mean, it's a guy that I've always liked, one of those role players. So,
yeah.
Happy for him. Hope he gets out of Sacramento this offseason, could latch on somewhere where he could get a little bit more shine. But, yeah, Lakers game was up next, and this – I felt like saying that this game was a layup drill was an insult to layup drills.
even their own announcers were like the NBA TV guys who were coming on in the middle. Oh, they were killing that game.
Yeah, I mean, like in layup drills, oftentimes you'll have the guy who passes you the ball coming towards you as you go for the layup. I thought that there would be more. There would be, you know, more defenders and more people in your way in a layup drill line. I thought it was laughable, the effort of both teams. I mean, you had well over 100 points in the paint. I forget the exact number. I want to say it was somewhere around
54 for the Pelicans and 60 for the Lakers.
Yeah, it was 114. And then, I mean, that was just the points in the paint, but you also had 71 free throw attempts. Most of those came by driving in the paint and getting fouled when the other team put up the slightest bit of effort. And, you know, we saw the Pelicans race out to 20-point lead. The Lakers made it a game, and I know everybody was, you know, having memories of the last 20-point victory that the Pelicans blew against the Lakers. But luckily there was no Kobe in this game. But, you know, as much as I like to see the gaudy stats and the Pelicans shooting 60% and scoring 132 points, you know, and I don't even want to hear about the pace. Pace had nothing to do with it. The defense was just absolutely terrible, and it was hard to leave that game excited when your defense was so bad against Pau Gasol. And basically, I mean, are any of these guys even a rotation player on any of the Western Conference playoff teams, other than Gasol?
No.
I mean, maybe
I could see Farmer.
See, I was going to say maybe Jody Meeks is like a ninth man.
Yeah, he could be a shooter in a Morrow mold.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, you just have a bunch of D-leaguers or end of bench guys on normal teams. You have 125 points, and I don't know. I'm glad to get the victory, and again, glad to pad some stats and get Tyreek Evans a little bit more confidence, whatever. But it didn't really leave that game feeling that happy, despite the fact that they broke an 8-game losing streak.
So the only thing I really wanted to mention when I left this game was, if anybody was confused as to why the Phoenix Suns could have turned down their opportunity of trading one of the Morris brothers and a first-round pick for Pau Gasol, just take any clip from this game where Pau Gasol is in it, watch him on the defensive end, and there's your answer. The very first play of the game, Eric Gordon gets into the paint, drives to the basket, lays the ball in. Pau Gasol didn't even take the effort to step towards him. He was literally a foot from the basket. Gordon lays the ball up in it. He didn't even muster the energy to take a step towards Gordon and maybe swipe at the ball.
Yeah.
I was flabbergasted, and he did that all game long. It wasn't like that one time. He was over and over again. He was not interested in moving.
That said, I mean, as much as I kind of poo-pooed this victory, this Lakers team in the past week has gone to Portland and won and beat the Thunder at home. So I don't even know what to say about that team. And they've also lost to the Clippers by 42. Like, what a crazy, crazy team. I mean, think about that 4-game stretch. Beat the Thunder, beat the Blazers, lose to the Pelicans, and lose to the Clippers by 42 points. They're an interesting team, but I really don't know how much to take away from a game in which, you know, no defense is being played on either side. And honestly, if that game, if there was a fifth quarter, I would probably put my money on the Lakers in that game. Like, it felt like, you know, it felt like the Pelicans had no chance of stopping them in the second half. And, you know, the lead was just built up so big that the Pelicans held on. But I didn't feel like the Pelicans, watching that game, were definitely the better team. They just happened to walk out with the win, and, you know, a game with two really terrible defenses.
Yeah. Although I will say the Lakers did have that stretch where they got incredibly hot from three, and it was kind of silly hot from three. And they would have had a better shooting percentage if they hadn't just gone stone cold their last 3-4 shots.
Yeah. But
yeah, it was kind of a comical game, though, defensively on both ends of the floor. So let's move on to Milwaukee, where you're going to tell me that the defense ratcheted up a notch, right?
On everybody except for Jeff Adrian, who came out of there, probably got more tweets asking, you know, whether we would sign him as a free agent than any other player this week. I mean, he looked like an absolute beast in the first half against the Pelicans, but no, I mean, it was just another game where, you know, a couple of guys, I mean, Chris Middleton was hitting his shots for the Bucks. I thought the Bucks' low post players were really terrorizing the Pelicans at times. You know, just some of the other guys, the perimeter players for the Bucks, couldn't make a shot. And to me, by far the highlight of this game was O.J. Mayo hitting Kuzma in the throat. And then the refs choosing to throw him out, and normally you see a player throw a jersey, you know, they get mad, they kick a chair.
He was already running out.
O.J. Mayo sprinted like he couldn't be happier to get out of this miserable game, and frankly, I don't blame him. If there's an Xbox One in the back or even cartoons, that might have been a better place to be than on the court with these two teams. I just thought it was hilarious watching Mayo not fight at all, just sprint to the locker room, you know, with joy after getting thrown out, because Steemsma, the intimidator, starts a lot of these fights. And
oh, come on, Steemsma didn't do jack.
Yeah,
it wasn't even like a hard foul. It was just like OJ's like, I'm done.
No, I mean, but people tend to just hate him. He gets under people's skin for whatever reason, and I don't mind it. It's kind of the opposite of of Tyson Chandler. Chandler was always the guy. People would start stuff with him, and he couldn't keep his cool. He would wind up getting the technicals or retaliating. Steamsma just seems to get under guys' skin, and we've seen him draw some technicals on guys. And actually, we've seen him take some charges the last couple of days. I mean, there's some positive things that you could say about Steamsma. Not many, and I'm not going to go overboard. But, yeah, that was my favorite part of this game by far, the Steamsma-OJ confrontation.
And I got to say, this OJ Mayo, this is full-fat mayo. I mean, not olive oil, not light. I mean, this is full. Dude looks like he hasn't been playing basketball this season. He looks like Tyreek Evans, except that Tyreek Evans actually has definition.
Yeah.
And that's not mayo. I mean, the guy is just basically giving up on life up there in Milwaukee. So, I don't know. It was not only comical watching him foul, but then watching him jiggle as he ran around on the floor. That's pretty sad.
Yeah.
But so you watched a lot more college basketball than I ever did. Did John Henson have those post moves when he was playing?
I mean, he had a little lefty hook, but it was usually just like he would get a rebound and it would be from 2 to 4 feet away. He didn't really have much range on it, or he didn't have the patience to execute it. But
because his I mean, he had the right footwork, he had his balance right, and when like the hook wasn't going to go, he was really good at leaning forward and getting a little scoop shot to go instead. I mean, I was moderately impressed that he had those moves.
Yeah, I mean, you got to do something in Milwaukee, work on your game, something, because you know there's not going to be much else to do. So. Yeah, I thought that, you know, he's a guy, like I've said, that if I could go back in time, I would probably take with that 10th pick. I'm not ultra impressed by, you know, many of the other guys that were taken after Rivers, but always a guy I liked, and glad to see him playing well in Milwaukee, even if it's kind of at the expense of Larry Sanders. You know, not getting any minutes because of injury this year and all his different little weird things he had going on. But I thought he was good. I thought Adrian really hustled. I still don't get the frustration with Giannis.
You mean the hype?
Adetokounmpo. Yeah, I don't get the hype. I mean, again, I saw David Thorpe put out some piece about how he could be one of the elite players in this league, could be the Paul George level, you know, the guy that's going to break out and jump into the top five at some point in his career. I usually fall in love with a lot of the guys that, you know, other people tend to fall in love with. I don't see it at all. I don't even really see the potential. I don't get it.
Yeah, it is odd because he didn't really. Everything about him just seems really raw and not in such a way that, oh, if he tightens up that dribble a little bit more, he'll be amazing. I mean, he even like the energy plays, they weren't that impressive.
No.
So, yeah.
No, but again, another bad team. But, you know, people could poo-poo these victories, but imagine how much worse it would be if you lose to the Lakers and Bucks. I mean, so yeah. One of the things I was doing a lot of research back on the 07-08 Hornets, just because I still truly believe that we could see a jump from this year to next, the same way that 06-07 went to 07-08, where the only real difference was health. That 07-08 Hornets team wasn't very good against good teams. They were 32-4. Against sub 500 teams and just 24-22 against teams 500 or better. So, you know, we could say that we don't really beat the good teams this year and, you know, we're only getting these victories against the bad teams. But even when you look at a lot of the good teams, that's all they do. Now, you hover around 500 against the other good teams and you just beat up on all the other teams that you should. And I think that this team, you know, potentially has one of those formulas down. Next year, it'll just be about getting guys healthy and being 500 against good teams as opposed to 1-20 or whatever we are at this point.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, one more game to talk about was one we were all excited about at the beginning. Denver Nuggets, overtime, 111-107 in favor of New Orleans. Anthony Davis threw down a 32-17 with 3 assists and 6 blocks, and he wasn't even necessarily the hero of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was the hero of the game. He didn't have the hero moment of the game.
True.
But, I mean, overall, just super impressive. And can we get him over this career-high 32-point hump? I mean, in that Laker game, he had 17 in the first quarter. I thought for sure he was going to break it. Going into this Denver game tonight, I think he had either 26 or 27. I think 27 after 3 quarters. I thought for sure he was going to break it. And if you would have told me there was overtime, I would have definitely thought so. But just can't get over this 32-point hump. He, you know, likes it for whatever reason. But, yeah, I thought, you know, he was really good tonight. I thought it was a game where the team really got nothing from Eric Gordon save for one little stretch at the beginning of the third quarter. But the backup guards who, you know, we talked about this on a previous podcast, if I have my way, these are the backup guards for the next couple of years. Austin Rivers and Anthony Morrow really, really played well off the bench and gave the team, a bit of a punch to go with Davis and Evans. And I thought the defense was actually pretty good in the second half as well.
Yeah, they ratcheted it up pretty strongly in the third after that first quarter where they were just, oh man, there was the pick and roll defense was brutally bad where one simple bounce pass and the guy didn't, it wasn't like he had like a foot to operate. He had a clear path to the basket with nobody even in sight.
Right.
And we're talking not like a speedy play. We're talking Timofey Mozgov here. So
I think it's Timofey.
Timofey? Timofey?
Timofey.
Timofey. Yeah, that's how I probably would have said it if I'd actually read it. So, the game was Fareed was doing everything you'd expect Fareed to do on one of his good nights, and Davis is battling with him, and Tyreke Evans, honestly, Tyreke Evans came up with bigger moments for me at the end of that game than even Anthony Morrow in his last little shot to tie it and send it to overtime, because Evans just managed to be in the right place every time and then get those little shots off, and if he can. I mean, people keep talking about him as, well, he's got to find that mid-range game, and I don't even buy it. If he can just finish those layups at a above-average rate, he is a monster.
I think that, and I really think that you're going to see the assists go up as the quality of his teammates rises as well, and it's not so much because...
Well, of the 4 games, he led the team in assists in all but one of them.
Right, and I think it'll get even bigger when there's more space. So many times I see him drive into the lane, and I think he could make a cross-court pass to a shooter, but we have a big plugged right down there, and then his man kind of in that passing lane. I imagine him... Again, on the court with Davis and 3 other guys who are at least threats as shooters, I think that not only will he finish better at the rim next year, I really think that there's a strong chance, even though Drew Holiday will be the quote-unquote point guard listed on the program, that he'll have a strong chance of leading this team in assists, again, assuming Eric Gordon is moved, Tyreek starts at shooting guard and gets the number of minutes that Monty has been giving him lately. But yeah, I think he's absolutely unstoppable in transition. I don't think that there's maybe any more effective play than Tyreke Evans pulling down a defensive board and then just racing to the other end. Yeah, I've been really impressed by the way he's played. We're looking at a guy putting up about 22, 6.5, 6.5 since he's been a starter. on a little over 50% shooting, and he's actually finding a bit of a three-point stroke, at least enough of which to make opponents respect him. So love the way he's been playing.
Yeah. I do need to say this about Eric Gordon, even though you already said we didn't get much out of him. I will say that in the fourth and overtime, when they put Gordon on Ty Lawson to defend him one-on-one, there wasn't a better player on the Pelicans at doing that. He was extremely good at staying in front of Ty Lawson.
Right, yeah. I mean, they did. Monty in overtime actually started with Roberts on Lawson, and Lawson blew right by him for a three-point mm-hmm. play. On the next possession, Monty switched it up, put Roberts on Aaron Brooks, and Gordon was great. I mean, when he really gets focused as an on-ball defender, I do agree he's good. It's in this system where there's so many rotations, and sometimes the guard is stuck on a bigger guy or he's stuck down low in the paint, that I really think Gordon suffers defensively. But on the ball, when he's really focused, I think he's a guy who could cover both positions and do it fairly well.
So let me ask you a question about these Denver Nuggets. Last year, 57 wins. Is Andre Iguodala that good?
I think it's a lot of things, but I think, yeah, I don't think that there's clear roles. I think the change in coach, I mean, as we saw today, they were probably most effective in their low post offense. And that's something that Shaw wanted to bring in. I mean, he was going to make JaVale McGee a big part of this offense. I think that there's a lot of things there. I don't think they've had a fully healthy team. Again, they haven't had Gallinari. I mean, if you look at their rotation, there's a lot of guys, you know, either in brand new roles or completely new to the team this year. So I don't think it was all Iguodala. I don't even think it was half Iguodala, but I think he was a guy that kind of was the glue that held all the pieces together once he'd left. You know, other than Lawson, I don't think any other piece really knows, you know, definitively what their role is night to night.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they lost Brewer and Kostakoufos as well, who is your current love affair. He's the center you want them to go get for cheap.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you look at the centers tonight for the Pelicans.
Yeah.
I mean, you have 5 points total. Ajinsa, you know, after a decent stretch, he's just disappeared, and it's the same thing. It seems like he's a guy that can maybe get in a little bit of a rhythm, but every single night, 5 minutes into the first quarter, he's got two fouls and he's being pulled, which, you know, I don't particularly understand, especially, you know, with him, and he's a guy that likes to get going early. Like, really, is he going to play so many minutes that he's going to foul out? And if he is, you know, are you going to miss him? These Ajinsa get two fouls in the first 5 minutes. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing Monty leaving him in and trying to get a little something from him in that stretch before going to Steams mode. He's just been getting far too many minutes for my taste. But, yeah, there's this new lineup that Monty seems to be loving to put out with Withy, Steamsma, and Aminu in the front court, and then Rivers and Morrow in the backcourt. And as much as I like those guys, that's just way too much pressure for you to put on. I mean, Morrow's not a guy that you'd like to see create off the dribble, and Rivers is a guy that you'd like to see get in the paint. And I think it's really handcuffing them. And I think it says a lot that both of those guys were in the plus minus, because there are multiple times that they were put in with that black hole of a front line. And, you know, they found ways to either get to the free throw line or do little things to get buckets, you know, to outscore the Nuggets bench in those situations. But that lineup's just awful, in my opinion.
So I have one question for you. What happened to Luke Babbitt?
So Monty said before the game, and this is the thing that I have a problem with as a writer for a team, and then I have a problem with regard to the fans, is Monty said before the game that basically the teams that they've been playing lately are all big teams with big power forwards, so Babbitt hasn't been able to come in first of all, if that was true, I would have a little bit of a problem with it because, and I've told you this before, I don't like how reactionary Monty always is. It's always, well, they're going to do something, so I'm going to react to that. How about, you know, putting Babbitt out there on Jeff Adrian and making Jeff Adrian cover on the perimeter, you know, and forcing, you know, a guy who's rebounding the ball so well to come out and guard the three-point line. So that's one thing. But the second part is it's not even true. I mean, the Pelicans played the Lakers the other night, and they had either Wes Johnson or Ryan Kelly at power forward the entire time. So, you know, either Monty's insulting our intelligence and just straight up lying to us and, you know, like we're not going to know, you know, who the opposing team's power forwards were in stretches. I mean, tonight we saw a lot of Wilson Chandler at the four, for instance. Or he really believes that, which would be even scarier to me. But that was Monty's explanation, and I just simply don't buy it. There's, you know, some kind of love affair there with Steve Smith that I personally don't understand.
So I there's a reoccurring thing that happens every time I get the Pelicans broadcast, and I call it my Jen Hale cringe moment, where she is reporting on the latest thing she's heard from Monty Williams, and I say, oh my God, if he's actually saying that to her, I'm going to vomit. Because it happens, like, probably every third or fourth game she reports, well, Monty said this. Like, the first one she did was, well, Monty wants Tyreke Evans to take more mid-range shots. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's and it happens, like, oh, what was the one tonight? Tonight was just as bad. It was, he wanted... Oh, man, I can't remember now. I'm having a mind blank. That's really embarrassing.
Well, Tyreke wanted to run more, and that was against a team that, you know, loves it when you play at that pace.
And right. And then there was two nights ago where he wanted Aminu to come in and make sure to attack off the dribble. Does that ever end well? If Aminu puts the ball on the floor, are you suddenly feeling like this is going to end well?
I mean, if I was rooting for the tank, I would be, but...
So, I mean, it's just everybody pay attention to it, listen to it. It usually happens in the first quarter at some point. Jen Hale will jump in reporting with her discussion with Monty earlier, and you can all be horrified as well.
Yeah, but I mean, that was Monty's reasoning for the Babbitt not seeing any minutes lately, and, you know, quite frankly, I can't see any scenario in which Steemsma's back next year, and at least evaluate what you see, what you have in Babbitt. But beyond just the evaluation, I don't understand, you know, why he wants to play. I mean, that Aminu Steemsma with the front line is horrific. There's nothing positive to be gained from that. I don't care if you take out Aminu there and go big. I don't care if you go take out Steemsma there. I really don't care which one, but there's no reason both of those guys should be on that front line over Babbitt. So I agree, but that was Monty's explanation.
I will say, when it mattered in this game, when crunch time was happening, he had the lineup that I wanted out there defensively, with Austin Rivers out there next to Eric Gordon, Tyreke Evans, Al-Farouq Aminu playing the power forward with Anthony Davis at center. And I thought it made a major difference to the way the Nuggets could attack. So
yeah,
that was good.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to get some victories. It's nice to see Monty, you know, at least changing things up. I mean, we'll just never know. We'll never know what his rotations would look like right now with a healthy roster. I would love to know. I mean, We get mad, but he was getting more creative. I mean, Anthony Morrow did start some games at small forward. We saw before Ryan Anderson got hurt, he was starting at the four with Anthony Davis at the five. I mean, you know, he said from the beginning he was going to use the first 30 games or so to kind of see where this team was at and then go from there. I really don't know what the rotations, what this team would have looked like if healthy. And, you know, I'm really curious because really we're yelling at him for not playing Babbitt over Steemsma, when in reality, neither of those guys should be playing you know, anyway, so I think I would be more fired up about this if it was he's playing Aminu over Tyreek, or he's playing, you know, Jason Smith over Ryan Anderson in key stretches. And frankly, we'll just never know how he would have coached this team if it was healthy for the whole season. So in some ways, it's still hard to judge him.
Yep. So coming up on the schedule, we got the homestand started over the next, 10 games? There's only one away game. Month of March only has two away games. This week is very light on basketball. There is a game Wednesday. Memphis comes to town. Portland comes on Friday. And on Sunday, Boston rolls in to visit. So which of those three teams would you like to talk about?
I feel like we talk about Memphis a lot in that matchup. You know, I'll wait till the end of the week. I will take Boston and let you choose which is more interesting of Memphis and Portland.
So I think I'm going to go Portland, and I almost don't want to because I actually kind of find Memphis a little bit interesting. But Portland, you know, everybody was aware that Portland tore off at the beginning of the season, what was like 24-5 to start the season. And since then, they're 42-21, which means they're playing about 500 ball. This is not actually that shocking to people who paid attention to them, because early in the season when they were tearing off all those wins, they weren't winning by, you know, 10, 15-point margins. They were winning by fours and fives. And if you looked at their point differential, when they were at the top of the Western Conference, they were always only scoring, winning by like four points per game. And the really good teams in the Western Conference, they usually end up scoring like 7 or 8 point differentials over the course of a season.
Right.
Those are the guys that actually compete in the end. So, I don't know. Portland is, they still just don't scare me. Which is stupid when I'm talking about a team that's 42-21. I'm going up against the Pelicans, who are clearly not the toast of the town. But their team just, other than Damian Lillard, who is an offensive firecracker, who some games are just unstoppable. There's nobody else on this team that terrifies me offensively. Is there anybody, like LaMarcus Aldridge is the big name. If he has the ball in his hands, are you scared?
No, and I think the reason why this team doesn't really terrify me that much is because they love the jump shot and they don't really try to get to the free throw line. I mean, really outside of Lillard from time to time. And to me, I mean, if you want to find an offense that scares me, it's the ones that attack, that use, you know, pick and rolls and slashes and cut off the ball and really attack the rim, because I just feel like the biggest weakness on this Pelicans team is the inability to you know, not foul when they defend. And that's why this Portland team, you know, never really scared me. I think, you know, we're down two key pieces right now. But I always felt when fully healthy, I really felt that the Pelicans were the better team, or at least the team that would win more often because of the matchup style. You know, down two key pieces now, it's going to be hard to have the firepower because, you know, Portland's always going to score. So I wouldn't predict a victory, but this isn't a team that I'm really impressed with either.
Yeah, and I mean, you hit the nail on the head when you say it's the teams that get to the basket that really scare me. I mean, those are the teams that pick apart the Pelicans because their interior defense is, you know, soft as cotton candy. And if you actually, this is one of those little things I noticed when I was out there looking at the SportsView data about, you know, Tyreek Evans and getting to the rim and how good he is at that. Damian Lillard was in the top 10 for getting to the rim, but he finishes at the rim at like 36%. So he gets there, but he's terrible.
Yeah.
But of course, he's an unbelievable shooter. So that more than makes up for it, because he and Wes Matthews just let fly all game long, and they're just dead-eye. So, I mean, it is one of those teams that will bury you under threes. They'll get big margins some games because they're just on fire from downtown. And the Pelicans, used to be, like, at the beginning of the season, that I was always terrified by barrages of threes. That's not my biggest worry anymore. So, you know, bring on your threes, Portland. Bring it on.
Yeah, yeah.
We're winning. We're taking it by five.
Oh, wow, that's pretty bold. Yeah, I'm not going to go that far. I would actually give the Pelicans a better chance to win against the Grizzlies. And, I mean, that would be in a season where there's not many, you know, victories. Sweeping the Grizzlies would be a nice little thing to put on your mantle. So I'm hoping for a victory there. I'm not betting on it against Portland. So
let's move on to your team. You think that's so interesting.
I mean, I like
Boston.
They've won two lately, three out of four, all against teams that are at least somewhat respectable. They beat the Nets, they beat the Hawks, who are both playoff teams. And Detroit is pushing for a playoff spot. And really, it's because Rondo's come back. And, you know, he's been playing well. Not necessarily hitting his shots, but, like, tonight, for instance, he has 18 assists. Getting other guys involved. I think that they have, you know, a collection of guys who, you know, could get them points. I remember that game in Boston, which, to me, is the worst game of the season. Even though they won, it's the worst game of the season because Ryan Anderson goes down. I just felt like that team could not score at all. Like, they had to manufacture everything, and really their best option was, you know, Jared Sullinger on a pick-and-pop three, and he wasn't hitting that night. But they didn't feel like they can manufacture anything. Now, you know, Jeff Green is a guy that could go off. I mean, he could have 30, 40-point games on any given night. But I feel like Rondo could get other guys involved. Jared Sellinger's been scoring all season. Kelly Olynyk is a guy who could score. I think, you know, Brandon Basket hit that mid-range jumper. I think that there's more offense there than you would, you know, you normally would associate with the Celtics. They've been winning as of late. I think they're well coached. So, you know, I think it'll be a competitive game. I mean, they play smart defensively. I think one of the blessings in this game is that Avery Bradley is likely still going to be out. And, you know, with him and Rondo in the backcourt, you know, one or both of those guys pressuring the ball throughout the night, I think, you know, that could give, especially some Roberts or even Rivers when he gets a little bit antsy, problems. Phil Presley's a guy who could do that a little bit off the bench. But I don't know. It's an interesting team, and it's a team that, you know, you see all these other teams that are in the bottom 10 as far as record, and a lot of them aren't playing hard at all. And Boston is still playing hard every night. So to see two teams that are clearly out of the playoffs, both, you know, playing hard, I'm going to enjoy watching it.
So let me ask you a question. Rajon Rondo, take him out of the mix. Is there a player on this team you would want in any starting five for the Pelicans?
In a scenario in which Gordon's gone, I would love Jeff Green as my small forward.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't like him that much. He just, he's so meh.
I understand, but what are we going to do? Go out and get, you know, LeBron? I don't know.
I guess if we're putting him in there to be a mediocre sort of okay shooter dude.
I don't know. I think he's a little better than that. And again, I mean, see, what's interesting to me is people use the arguments both ways. Like, if a guy is on a team with nobody, they'll say, oh, he's getting all these points or whatever because nobody else is going to shoot it. But then when he's on a team with a bunch of other guys, oh, he's not scoring enough because other people are taking away his shots. Like, I don't know. I did go back and listen to the podcast from last week with Jerry V, and you and Jerry V kind of had it both ways with Eric Gordon on that, where he was struggling early in the season because there was too many guys, and now he's struggling late in the season because there's not enough. Like, we just
wow, you're really resentful about me not backing you up there.
Yeah, I am a little bitter, but I mean, Jeff Green is averaging 17 points on 14 shots. Is that great? No. Is that a quantum leap over anything you will ever get from Aminu? Even if Aminu was on a church ball team, I do think so. So,
wow.
I mean, again, we're talking about level of upgrade, and yeah, I would take Jeff Green. There would be other options I like more. You will probably hear me fawn over PJ Tucker for the next 3 or 4 months, but you know, if I can't be guaranteed somebody that I absolutely love, yeah, I would take Jeff Green and be very happy if you could move Eric Gordon and get Jeff Green and you know, a serviceable center for that same amount of money.
Yeah. I don't know. Jeff Green, Wilson Chandler, they're just not exciting to me. I have a hard time like thinking, oh, that guy would be a real upgrade. It's just kind of like a meh.
You know, but go look at the small forwards in this league. I mean, I was looking at it today because you know, they have Tyreke Evans listed as a small forward, and already, even though he's had a down season, Tyreke Evans is seventh amongst small forwards in PER. I mean, you have the big four, if you consider LeBron and Carmelo small forwards. Then you have Kawhi Leonard, who, yeah, we would all take. And then, you know.
You forgot Rudy Gay.
You got Rudy Gay. I wanted to go around his name. But, I mean, you don't have many. I mean, people are fawning over Trevor Ariza this year, and probably rightfully so, because he's putting up Trevor Ariza contract year numbers. But, you know, Chandler Parsons, Nicholas Batum, like, yeah, there are some good ones out there, but, you know, those guys are going to get 10, 12 million a year. There's not many great small forwards out there. So, yeah, Wilson Chandler doesn't make me happy, you know, doesn't make me giddy, but he's probably going to be better than the small forward going against him more nights than he's going to be worse. So, I mean, I would take a guy like that, but I will take PJ Tucker overall, and nobody will ever be able to talk me out of it. That is my man crush of this year, and it will not end until either the Pelicans sign somebody else or the Suns re-sign PJ Tucker. He will be my man crush until that moment.
All right, so Memphis, Portland, Boston, your record for the week is?
I'm going to go 2-1. I think they bookend. I think their defense plays a lot better. I think that they're getting some confidence at home. I think they bookend a Portland loss with victories against Memphis and Boston.
All right, so I am also going 2-1. And even though this is ridiculous because we always beat Memphis, I think Memphis will figure it out this time.
Yeah.
So we take Portland, we take Boston, and Memphis will finally get their win against us this year. Marc Gasol will do some amazing mid-range stuff, and we'll all be sad.
Okay.
So anything else you want to talk about, or are we ready to go?
No, I think we should leave on a high note. I hope we're back at it next week. And yeah, it's good. It's feeling good to get a win right before a podcast. Like I said, I'm kind of flummoxed, but I feel like we had enough to talk about.
Yeah. So let me ask you one question. If the Pelicans...
PJ Tucker. Oh, wait.
If they manage to win 10 of their next games that they have left, 10 total.
Uh-huh.
Is that a success for you, or do you think they should be able to do better than that?
I mean, I really, this is going to sound so weird, and I really think that the season is a success as much as it could be already. You know, I mean, those...
Just because of because injuries aside, of course, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because of Anthony Davis, I mean... Again, we all knew they weren't winning the championship this year. This was a process. And what did we know about the process? We know that, you know, the main part of this team moving forward for the next 6, 8, 10 years is Anthony Davis. And I think, you know, as much as we were all excited about Anthony Davis and as optimistic as we were, I don't think that any of us would have really put Anthony Davis at this point, at this point of the process, this late in the season. So if he's the key to the puzzle, if, you know, the puzzle isn't going to be constructed or put together, you know, for 3 or 4 years max anyway, then I have to deem it a success because the key is even further along than any of us would have imagined. Now, the one thing that I need, you talk about 10 wins, I wouldn't care. You could give me 2 more, 4 more, 6 more. I absolutely wouldn't care. The one thing that I want before this season's over is I want Ryan Anderson or I want the Pelicans to announce at some point that Ryan Anderson is expected to return and be, you know, ready to go starting next year. There's actually somebody on Twitter that I follow and follows me, Jay Miles, and he went to this season ticket holder event and he talked to Ryan Anderson and asked him, you know, point blank, are you going to be ready by next year? You know, or, you know, how's it going? And Ryan Anderson actually said, I'm going to be ready by next year. And the guy asked, beginning of next year? He said, yep, beginning of next year. Now, of course, he could have lied to a fan. There would have been, you know, nothing to benefit him by disclosing, you know, the full truth. But wins aren't even really on the radar for me. I'd love 5, 6, 8, 10 more. But really, we've already won with Anthony Davis. And if you want to get me excited about next year, it's not going to be about the wins. It's going to be about hearing Ryan Anderson is definitely coming back, and the prognosis is that he's going to be 100% ready to go by the beginning of next season.
I think I can't argue with that. So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know, and we'll be back next week.